Well, I guess it was late in the game, and Pittsburgh tied it up. We weren't used to getting six runs in one game, and it was a crime to have to leave a game when you had six runs. But they put Hod in to relief, and Dane Clay hit that home run, and through that, Clay was the only home run he hit all year, and it was the only win that Lisenby got all year. So this is the way things were during the war. In fact, I think we had a deaf-mute playing outfield.
Oh, really?
Dick Sipek.
Oh, really?
From the S-I-P-E-K. And we had a fellow that came from Venezuela who was recommended to somebody on our ball club. Through some ambassador that knew somebody connected with a Cincinnati club, and they said send him on to, without even seeing him before, know whether he could play or not. Chuchu Ramos, R-A-M-O-Z, I think his name was. Little outfielder. In fact, nobody had ever knew anything about him. Didn't speak English very well. And I don't know how many games he played, but he played some with us, I know that.
Okay, I'll have to look that name up. apparently you suffered an arm injury in 1945.
After the 44 season, a lot of us at that time were asked to make these USO trips. And we all gathered over at Fort Totten in outside New York.
How was that spelled? T-O-T-T-E-N?
Yeah, and there was five groups of us. Mm-hmm. And the group I was in had Frank Frisch, Mel Ott, Dutch Leonard, and a writer from St. Louis, Roy Stockton. And we went to the European Theater. And then there was another group went to down in Italy. It was DeRocher and Medwick, and I don't know all the names of the fellows that were on these trips. But then there was another group that went to China, Burma, India, and there was another group that went through the South Pacific, and that had Beans Reardon and the umpire. And anyway, there was five in each group. And we had some experiences in Europe. In fact, we got caught in the Battle of Bulge.
No kidding.
Right in there. And we were stopped from going out at night. And the troops, you know, they thinned out and stopped us from gathering. And we met quite a few guys over there that, boy, I'll tell you, we had many a moment on that trip. And
what do you mean, as far as being close to the action?
Well, things were at a kind of a lull before that breakthrough came.
Yes.
We had gone in, and we was talking to General Bradley and General Hodges, and they showed us some of the information they had about if anything would start, we figure this is where they'll break through and things like this and that. And each little, we'd start out, and we was in Paris with when we first went over there, and then we went out with the 101st, 102nd Air, 101st, and the 82nd Airborne outfits. We're a rest camp in Reims, and we stayed with them for a couple of weeks. And then we went up as far as Maastricht in Holland, mm-hmm. Worked our way down through Malmedy and Eupen, Belgian-German border. We wound up in Netz and Nancy, and when that breakthrough came, things got kind of all mixed up, so they didn't allow too many to gather in one spot. So,
Did you see Cecil Travis when you were there?
I don't know. There was we could have.
His feet were frozen in that battle.
Well, that was
finished him.
That was one of the biggest casualties. I think one of the causes of more casualties than anything at the time, and then they made him. Like the Russians sleep head to toe and rub each other's feet. And I remember Patton made them change their socks every day, mm-hmm. And things like that. We were with General Patton one night, too, in Luxembourg when he was going up into the Bulge. And where the airborne troops were trapped in there. When mm-hmm. we had met General McAuliffe and General Gavin at that rest camp when we first went over. And that was quite an experience.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So anyway, get back. We got back, and I stayed around the house. I said, "Well, I'm not ready to go to spring training. I was late getting there, 45, and didn't come around in shape very good." And it was late in the season, sometime late July, I guess, or somewhere first of August. I was pitching in St. Louis, and even though the quality of the league wasn't as good, it was just as tough to win, you know, because we didn't have them either. And I hurt my arm in that game against the Cardinals. I think it was the last ball I threw that game or not. But I went in and saw the trainer, and he said, "Yeah," he said, "I think you hurt it pretty good."
What made happened? Him think something that? Pop? Was it an elbow problem?
No, it was one of those games. It was long, it was hard, and we won the game 2-1, and Del Rice was the last hitter, and he had home run power, and I was putting that little extra on
little
it,
extra,
keeping the
sure.
ball up. And boy, he popped one up, a foul ball. It looked like it was 9 miles high. I dropped my arm and said, "Please don't drop that one." Didn't want to throw anymore. I thought something right there. So I started two games after that, but I couldn't raise them. That about finished me as far as being a pitcher.
Yeah, I noticed that your record suddenly just goes down after that. I think you were 23-8 and 44, and then 10-10 and 45.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Of course,
yeah, it wasn't any
of course
fun.
You weren't a spring chicken by that time either, were you?
No, but I was always in good shape. I was never out
you
of
felt
shape.
Well?
I was always in shape.
Mm-hmm.
Winter and summer, I never was too far out of shape at any time, because after the season those days, they did things a little different then. We used to go hunting or golf, you know, and have something to do. We're bowling, play handball and singles and doubles game all the winter. And was pretty active usually when I went to spring training, as far as I was concerned. Run a few miles and do your running, and it wasn't, you know, you came around in shape pretty good,
mm-hmm.
pretty fast. I had never had a weight problem of any kind. Well, I had no particular hang-ups on food and things, drink or anything like that. I was one of the lucky ones, I guess. But to me, being in shape, that was the name of the game, you know, take advantage of what ability you had.
Sure. Do you feel the ball players were closer to each other? I mean, interacted more with each other during the war because of the...
I
won't say emergency conditions, but certainly possibility.
Oh, I don't think so.
There was
a little different feeling then. I don't know. You just felt like, well, should we be playing or shouldn't we be playing, you know? But they said, go ahead and play. And we were all subject to call.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I got home there with one... couple of winners, and they said, "Your name came up last night. The draft board wasn't far away." And I said, "I don't know. I don't have any particular great skill to keep me out of service, you know, as far as the job was concerned." So, but I said, even if I had, if they were going to play ball, I would be playing ball. So,
sure. If I'm not mistaken, back in those days, pitcher stayed in the game longer. I mean, you were more or less expected to try and finish what you started. Now, how do you feel about this? I know that as time went on, relief pitchers were used more and more, but during the war, was it still basically the idea of the starting pitcher going or trying to go the route?
Well, you all always like to finish what you start. It was a matter, you know, that was the way to do things then, but... It's a little harder, I think, to finish, to have all these complete games more than it used to be. I don't know whether the difference comes from whether the talent on the bench, that is, the difference between the one that's playing and the one that's sitting on the bench. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's as big a difference between those players now than as there used to be. It used to be a set lineup. I remember when I was growing up as a kid, of course there was only 16 clubs at the time, but you could name almost everybody in the lineup, and if one name was missing, you'd wonder what happened. He wasn't playing that day. But it wasn't so much the switching of the right and the left.
You mean platooning?
Now, okay. Like I say, I don't know whether this difference between the fellas sitting on the bench, your extra players, and the regular players has narrowed down. And, well, they're all doing it. One fella can hit a pitcher better than the next guy. I guess it's best to take him out.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
During the war, who were the toughest hitters in the National League for you?
Oh, boy, you got me there. There were still, every lineup had one or two good hitters in there.
Mm-hmm.
But, I say anybody comes up with a bat,
he's potentially dangerous to the pitcher. Who was your wartime roommate on the Reds? Or did you switch? I mean, did you have several?
Well, Eric, when Joe Beggs was, before he went away, then I roomed with Eric Tipton for a couple of years. Then when Joe came back from the service, we roomed together again.
I see. Were there cliques in the Reds? I mean, did the rookies hang out together and the veterans hang out together, or was it a
no? I don't think so. No, I don't think there was any. We didn't have any particular cliques around. I don't believe we had. Mm-hmm. As far as before the war, feeling was pretty good amongst that. Well, most all the fellas, as far as I know, there might have been some personal feelings one or the other somewhere along the line, but none that I know of. Everybody has personal likes or dislikes, I suppose, but no, it's just, during the war years, I guess a lot of fellas are just glad to be there, you know.
Sure. You played one game in the outfield in 1942. How did it happen? Do you remember it?
1942. I don't know, really. Of course, I was the kind of guy that liked to play every day. Even after I had some success as a pitcher, I still liked to. Hated the thought of not being able to play every day. Oh, it must have been an emergency of some kind. I don't know. Somebody.
What were your opinions of manager McKechnie?
Oh, Bill was a good manager. He's a good organizer.
A driver? Did he take it easy?
No, he could be the way he had to be.
Mm-hmm. Did he treat all the ballplayers the same? Or did he
pretty much, I think.
Each individual?
As far as I was concerned. I don't know of anybody that he treated different than anybody else. He may have, I don't know, really.
Okay.
He was good manager.
Do any players in the Reds stand out in your mind?
Oh, yeah, because I could remember pitching against you mean this is before the war you're going back?
No, I'm talking about during the war, wartime Reds players. I prefer to limit it to 42 to 45.
Well, we had a little fella at third base, Stevie Messner, who actually was had been in a Cardinal chain, but he was smart and he knew hitters, and he tried. A little round fella. If you ask him for information about somebody at that time, all through the minor leagues, they were taking everybody that could play a little bit. Mm-hmm. And if there was anybody you had any doubt about, by golly, little Messner would know him.
Oh, really? He was the storehouse of information?
Because I guess he had that minor league career with in back of him, too. And, of course, Eddie Miller came with us at that time. He had a great glove at shortstop. And he had a little power. He could hit a ball once in a while. Of course, Lonnie Fry was still there.
Mm-hmm. Woody Williams.
And then Fry went in the service. And then Woody Williams came. And, of course, Frank McCormick was still there, but he had hurt his back some way. When he caught his spikes in the ground and twisting, he was playing with a big harness. And they had traded Ernie Lombardi to Boston. I guess they just sold him to Boston. and Ivel Goodman wasn't there anymore. And the outfield was a scramble. Like I say, Tipton was there. Eric had a bad ear, but he had pretty good power, but it was usually in center or right center where most of the room in the outfield is, so he was just hitting big outs, really. And if the guy had ever been able to pull the ball a little bit, he'd have been all right, because Eric was a good competitor and a heck of a nice guy. Great football player, too, one time. I guess I'm not telling you much here.
No, this is fine.
And like I said, we had that little fellow from Venezuela and Dick Sipek, the deaf mute, and Big Al Libke, who had a lot of power but didn't connect very often. Real nice guy. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Ray Mueller was there. Ray Lomano came for a while, and then he went into service.
Remember a fellow named Joe Just?
Yeah, Joe Just was
a substitute catcher.
Yes, he was a catcher.
Nuxhall said he was the man who caught him that day.
And Joe was stayed around in baseball for quite a while. He went to Martin Association. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Joe Just. I'm glad you mentioned him.
What kind of a guy was Vandermeer? He stayed through 43.
Oh, Johnny was good fellow as far as I was concerned.